The following is a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.
We just never get enough of talking about Noah and the Ark. And that's what we're going to do on today's episode of Grace in Focus. Hi, I'm Lucas Kitchen with the Grace Evangelical Society. Thank you for joining us. Right now, we are in the midst of a series where we're exploring the various meanings of the words saved and salvation in the New Testament. And we're looking at five different New Testament books. Right now, we're in Hebrews, and we're going to look at Hebrews 11:7 today, which has to do with Noah and the salvation that he offered to his household. So let's go right to today's discussion with Dr. Bob Wilkin and Sean Lazar. Here's Grace in Focus.
Welcome to Grace in Focus Radio. We also have Grace in Focus, the magazine, and we have a blog. I don't think the blog has a title, though, but let's just call it the Grace and Focus blog, which you can get every day, and it's just as thought-provoking, I think, as our discussion, but it's a different medium. So in our podcast, we like to just discuss Bible and theology topics, and we have been discussing over the last couple weeks, at least, the idea of salvation in five different New Testament books. The last book that we're going through is Hebrews, and we're just about to hit the last verse in the last book.
And that's Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 7, which, by the way, follows one of the most famous verses in Hebrews. Hebrews 11 is probably the most beloved chapter in Hebrews because it's the easiest to follow, and it's got this hall of faith where you've got all these great examples of faith in the Old Testament.
Oh, yeah.
But in Hebrews 11, 6, the author says, "Without faith it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him." So that's a principle both for the believer and the unbeliever, that God's a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And then in verse 7 it says, "By faith Noah," you know, that would be Genesis chapter 6, 7, 8, and 9, "Noah being divinely warned of things not yet seen." In other words, 120 years before the first flood in human history, the only worldwide flood so far in human history, and actually ever, because God promised he would never do that again. That's why we have the rainbow. "He was divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his household." Now, he prepared this ark, which was this huge boat. I believe they have it, where is it, North Carolina or something?
Is it Kentucky?
Wherever it is, there's this ark project.
Have you been? You obviously haven't.
I don't even know who does it.
Have you been outside of Texas?
I never have. Yeah, I haven't been anywhere in a long time. COVID has kept me close to home. I did go to Tampa last November. But anyway, he prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. Well, that last part sounds like, okay, that might refer to regeneration because it's by faith. But notice, he was condemning the world not to eternal condemnation, but to death by drowning. His household was saved not in terms of regeneration, but saved from death in the flood. I think this last use of soteria in Hebrews, I call it an outlier. That is, it doesn't quite fit. Now, it sounds like in the English translation that this is the verb sozo, right? It says, "for the saving of his household." And so it sounds like it's a participle. But actually, it's the noun soteria in the accusative. "And he prepared an ark for salvation of his household," or "for the salvation of his household." And so I would not translate it saving because it gives the impression we're looking at a verb here. But in any case, it's the same word, soteria. And the point is that this one is not talking, like all the others in the book, about being Christ's partners in the life to come, but it's deliverance from the flood. Ellingsworth represents the view that most commentators have of salvation in Hebrews, and in this verse in particular. He says, "Elsewhere in Hebrews, the reference is to eternal salvation," By that he means regeneration. Connected is here with obedience in 6:9-9:28. Only here is the reference to a temporal escape from drowning. So he does see it as a temporal escape from drowning. And even here, the wider implications are perhaps not entirely absent, since Noah's rescue from the flood is an essential link in God's purpose for his people. So he's saying, okay, obviously, they weren't saved in the sense of being born again as a result of getting on the ark. They were saved from drowning in the flood, but he says that has implications that are broader. Hodges, I think, has an excellent discussion, and he ties in his understanding of 11:7 with his understanding of salvation in the entire letter as it refers to becoming Christ's partners. Hodges says, quote, that God does reward who seek him is suggested by the career of Noah, who became an heir of righteousness by faith. What he inherited was, in fact, the new world after the flood. Isn't that a good point?
Right.
After he came out of the ark and his three sons and wife and three daughters-in-law, those eight people were now heirs of the planet. They were the total number of people on planet Earth at that point. God was essentially starting over, like Adam and Eve at the beginning. Well, here we have Noah and his wife and three sons and their wives. And those four couples are the ones who are going to populate the planet and be in charge of ruling the planet.
Right, right.
And Hodges goes on to say, as the readers might inherit the world to come, see chapter 2 and verse 5. The reference here to Noah saving his household recalls the writer's stress on a Christian's salvation inheritance. It further suggests that a man's personal faith can be fruitful in his family as they share it together, unquote. So his point is, even in this verse, which I'm calling an outlier, there's a kind of a hint of the fact that Noah and his family became the ones who were ruling in this earth, and it links in with the idea that all believers have the potential of being Christ's partners in the life to come. But in order to realize that, of course, we must be obedient, like Noah was when he built an ark contrary to all common sense.
Right.
In other words, he believed God even though there'd never been a flood. So maybe we could conclude what we've been saying in Hebrews and then conclude the series. And in Hebrews, it's being Christ's partners in the life to come. If we're eagerly waiting for him, if we're following him on the path of obedience and suffering. And that's a privilege that not every believer will gain. But you and I can gain that. That's what we should long for, to rule and reign with Christ forever. And that's a theme that runs throughout the whole New Testament. So let's kind of summarize the other four books. Okay, we talked about the meaning of sozo and soteria in Hebrews as being Christ's partners. We also talked about three uses of soteria in Philippians. And we said when Paul uses that in Philippians, he's talking about successfully handling suffering for Christ and persecution for Christ in a way that will result in vindication before Christ at the judgment seat of Christ. So in a sense, it's similar to the salvation in the book of Hebrews. We also looked at the verb sozo in the book of James. It's used five times. All five uses refer to salvation from judgment in this life.
All right, so physical salvation.
Physical salvation. And so it's a mistake to read salvation in James as though we're talking about salvation from eternal condemnation. If you hold that view, you end up teaching work salvation. Because what James is saying is if you do not apply your faith, then you're not going to be saved from God's judgment in this life.
So there is such a thing as work salvation, but it's temporal things.
Right, it's temporal salvation.
Eternal salvation, heavenly salvation is by faith apart from works. But being saved from life's trials, that takes work.
Right. That's 121, 119 to 21. That's 214 to 17. That's chapter 5, verses 19 and 20.
And then in Romans, Paul is writing to justified people and telling them about how to be saved from God's temporal wrath.
Now, does that sound odd to you? He's talking to people who are already justified to tell them how they can be saved. From wrath is the key words.
And it's interesting, the word salvation in Romans appears outside of the chapters on justification.
Exactly.
And even outside the chapters on sanctification, right? On 6,
right.
7,
well,
8.
It's at the very beginning of the section on sanctification in 5, 9, and 10. That's the introduction to the sanctification. Once you get into the sanctification section, 5, 12, and following all the way through the end of chapter 8, it doesn't occur anywhere in there.
Right. So this salvation is separate even from that. And we can be saved from God's wrath by...
Well, we're saved from his wrath by living by the Spirit, Romans 5, 6, 7, and 8, and walking according to the Spirit, not according to the flesh.
Right. You believe, and then you call. You confess, right?
Right. And you're part of the believing community. And the final book we looked at was books, were 1 and 2 Thessalonians.
Right.
We saw the three uses of soteria, or salvation, there refer to the rapture, being saved from the seven-year tribulation period.
Right.
All five of these books illustrate the fact that when you're doing Bible study, you need to look at words, because words have meanings, and those meanings are developed in context.
Mm-hmm.
So study the meanings in the local context, and study all the other uses of the word in the same book or by the same author in their context.
That's right.
The beautiful thing about this is the more you do this, the easier it becomes. Because you have years and years and years of studying the Word of God, and God blesses that because you've been diligently seeking Him, and He rewards you with more truth. And of course, the more your mind is renewed, the more your life is transformed, Romans 12:2.
Well, that concludes our series on salvation in five different New Testament books. If you've enjoyed that and you want something written down on paper, look for Bob's article to appear in the autumn 2021 issue of the journal, The Grace Evangelical Society. You can get a subscription for a whole year for under $10, and that includes shipping. So that's pretty awesome.
It is.
That's a great deal. So pick it up, and we will see you next time.
Thank you, gentlemen, for that great discussion. Would you like to explore more of the topics that we talk about on this show and don't know where to do it? Well, I'm going to tell you where. It's at faithalone.org. That's our website, faithalone.org. On the site, we have all kinds of free resources that are designed to help you grow and mature in your faith and your understanding of Scripture. For example, we have this beautifully laid out full-color magazine that you can get a free subscription. Just go to faithalone.org and sign up on the site. Would you like to become a financial partner with this show? Well, if so, you can find out how to do that on faithalone.org. All gifts are tax-deductible and very much appreciated because it's how we stay on the air. By the way, we love to hear from our listeners. Maybe you've got a comment, feedback, or even a question. If you do, I'll give you our email address so that you can reach out to us. It's radio@faithalone.org. That's radio@faithalone.org. Well, that does it for our series on the different meanings of the words salvation and saved. Tomorrow, we're going to be taking questions from listeners just like you. So tune in for that. I'm Lucas Kitchen with Grace Evangelical Society. And until next time, let's keep grace in focus.
The proceeding has been a listener-supported ministry from the Grace Evangelical Society.